What is a people-centered city?
We'll find that out.
And meet a candidate running to represent Manitou in Colorado Springs and Points West in Congress.
Next on Loving the Springs, where we celebrate the best and elevate the rest.
You're listening to Studio 809 Podcasts. This is what community sounds like.
I'm Al Brody.
I'm Dave Gardner.
And I'm Carrie Simison. Al is joining us today from Palm Springs, and with us in the studio is Zuri Horowitz, a very busy young community citizen.
She leads People-Centered Colorado Springs. She's an advocate for safer streets and roads for all. She's been serving on the Citizens Transportation Advisory Board for Colorado Springs.
And as if that's not enough, she's also a candidate running for Congress in Colorado's 5th Congressional District. Welcome, Zuri.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And we left one thing out. You also have to earn a living in the middle of all that, don't you?
Yep, I'm also an occupational therapist. So it's very, very, very busy right now. I know most people say like running for office is horrible, but I have to say it feels very empowering to be able to talk about issues that are really important and talk about policies and highlight local communities and advocates who are doing really great things in the community. So that's been very fun.
Well, I want to circle back before we get to the end to talk a lot about your candidacy and your platform. But first, let's talk about People-Centered Colorado Springs and what your local activism there is all about.
So it's basically walkability, bikeability, transit, and affordable housing. And those all go hand in hand because you can't have walkability, bikeability, or transit if people are completely far apart from each other. First off, it's very expensive to have sprawl because you don't have as many people per mile. So that means that you don't have as many people per mile to pay taxes and pay for those roads. So when people are like, why are our roads so bad? Well, we have, I think, maybe the most roads per county in Colorado. And so that means that we don't have the tax base to necessarily pay for those roads. So, if you have a ton of roads, you have to have enough people on those roads to pay for them.
Yeah, and we've got miles and miles and miles of roads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's kind of my thing. So yeah, just making sure that then we have the bikeability, walkability. We already have enough roads. How are we making sure that they work for people? So that we make sure that we have that transit, that we have that ease of being able to get to work, ease of being able to get to school. And, and it's like right now we have it so that kids have to have their parents drive them to every activity that they do. They can't just meet up, in their neighborhood, hang out, go to school, all that other stuff. And now they have to rely on their parents, and their parents, their whole lives are around taking their kids to school, moving them around. And it's like it leaves us without organic connection. It leaves us without community because we have to plan everything to get anywhere.
That's such a change like from my childhood. And I grew up in the Midwest in a smaller town. Fargo Moorhead was about 80 to 100,000 people back in the 80s. But I walked or rode my bike to school every day. The after school activities took place on campus. Like, of course, every once in a while you have a football game at a different school or something. I mean, my mom would set an egg timer in the morning. I mean, I was a little bit of a latchkey kid too, but egg timer, when it went off, I'd turn the TV off, you lock the door and walk to school. And even summertime, like the 4-H programs and everything were accessible via bike. And I don't know, I talk to friends that have kids and some of it sounds like safety concerns in this day and age, but also living in a bigger city like this, it absolutely, like, nothing is close enough or easy enough for you to get to as a 12-year-old.
Yeah, well, and I mean, this is like there was a crash, I think around like 4th of July, of 4 young people dying in like a drunk driving crash. And people are like, well, let's just guilt trip people into not drunk driving. And there was also another thing where kids were doing donuts and there was a horrific crash in a parking lot. It's because they don't have other things to do. You know what I mean? They don't have places to go, places to be. Like if you're in like a European town, you can be like, okay, we're going to be in the plaza today. And you just go to the plaza and you're going to see some of your friends. Here you're like, well, let's drive around. Like I was born here, but lived in New York City. In New York City, you kind of can just like wander around, do what you want. And then here, we moved here. And I was like, I can't get anywhere. Like even rebelling isn't fun because there's nothing to do. I don't know what I'm supposed to do here.
Well, and the mall is dead. But the three of us, dare say we all live close enough to downtown that we could get on a bicycle and ride our bike downtown. Not everybody does, but they could make that choice. It's a little bit more challenging, the economics of it, but then you save a lot of money not having to have a car or not having to drive as much.
But I think it's also not fair. Like, the places that are walkable and bikeable in Colorado Springs are old builds. If you go north, if you go east, if you go south, southeast, it's so frustrating. There's a King Supers southeast, and it's technically walkable from houses. This I've also seen this up north. Technically, you could walk to the grocery store. But you can't because it's not safe because there's no walkable route. And so you'll see some people live across the street from the grocery store but cannot get there because of the way the buildings were built, which is crazy. And it's dangerous. And it's like a half mile to get across at a crosswalk. And then people are like, well, why weren't they crossing at the crosswalk? I'm like, well, are they going to walk half a mile to go from one end to the other? And there's no lighting, and, you know, like, how do you expect people to do things?
Educate us more about that. So it's not walkable. The crosswalk's a good example, but there are other things about the way it was designed for cars and not for people that discourage people walking. What are the other characteristics there?
So when we talk about a road, we talk about, is it straight, wide, and fast? So generally, when we talk about car-centered planning, that car-centered planning is trying to get cars from one place to another as fast as possible. And I don't say as quickly as possible, because that's not true. Because cars take up more space, they require greater infrastructure, they move things further apart from one another. And when you have a road that's wide and straight and fast, it encourages people to not look around and be aware when they're driving. It says cars are more important than the community that lives there. So when you have a street that's built slower, narrower, has more visual stops, might have, you know, bump outs, might have raised sidewalks, make sure that a street light prioritizes if you see a pedestrian and they push the button, the light changes. That says, when I see a pedestrian, I better look because that person's going to have the right of way. Currently, most lights here don't do that. So when you press the button, someone's like, I don't really need to worry about them. They have to wait a whole cycle before they pass. So I don't need to think about the pedestrian. So it's, does the design of the road, does the design of the city think about people and people being safe getting around? And that's a complicated question because that requires transit, that requires bikes, that requires walkable, and that also requires cars. So it's a more complex thing. It's not just, I'm going to put in a bike lane, but not think about how that bike lane interacts with the road. We have to make sure that that bike lane also is safe to get in and out of, and it doesn't, you know, just randomly join into the road and then not join into the road, or it's not protected. You know, it's like, I'm a bike rider. I am not a cyclist. I'm a terrible bike rider. So I'm like, it needs to be for people like me, who I'm not getting out there like, you know, killing it on the bike. I'm like, la, 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 just sort of riding along. Like, I want a protected bike lane. I want it to be safe for me. I don't want to be competing with cars in any way. I just want to get from one destination to another safely and, you know, quickly enough.
And, you know, good example of kids not being able to ride their bikes as much and have that freedom as they used to. Most people live close enough to their schools that the kids could ride their bikes to school, except for the fact that they don't feel that it's safe.
The city is working on it, but middle schools and high schools did not require school zones. And beyond just requiring school zones, we also need traffic calming. So it's not just that drivers are driving slower, but is it accommodating kids walking and biking to school? Is there a bike lane? Is it protected? Is it slow enough at all times? Are there bump outs? Are there things that let people know? Like Doherty had a, sorry guys, I tracked traffic crashes for 3 years. So I know a lot about them, and it was very depressing and horrific. So it's making sure that the design of the place is built for biking and arriving at school, not just saying, okay, from 7 to 9, you can't speed here. It's like anytime I see a school, is it not just that I acknowledge it's a school, I have better be safe. It's, no, my car is going to get slowed down by this street, and it's not going to be easy for me to speed by this street.
But what a horrible penalty all these drivers are going to have to pay if you have a city like that. It's going to take them, what, 5 minutes longer to get to work?
One thing that people have pointed out that are advocates, they also point out that everybody is a pedestrian during the day. Every time having to go through a parking lot, you're a pedestrian. Having to get into your home, you're a pedestrian. So we are always pedestrians. And so we have to stop identifying ourselves with like metal boxes that are really huge. And, you know, and some people love to drive. I personally don't. But we still just need to, I think, accommodate people over speed.
I've got a question for you. Mm-hmm. It's not just ignorance, it's intention. We have built the city, and I'm talking Colorado Springs, in a way that's classist and racist on purpose. And I'll give you a clear example. That's the Broadmoor School District, just having one school district for an area, and they don't have any busing. So without busing, they only have people in the neighborhood that can make it, and they only have people in the neighborhood who can drive their kids to school. So it's a very specific thing, and this didn't happen accidentally. This happened intentionally. And that's just one example. I could give you hundreds. And you're not just dealing with, this is a problem, and I know how to fix it. You're dealing with people who, this isn't a problem. This is what we designed, and we don't want you to fix it. And that's what I came up against for decades. And I admire your enthusiasm. But are you prepared to deal with not only the community that doesn't want to move ahead, they intentionally don't want to move ahead? How do you deal with that?
So I'll say this. First off, I think younger generations are a lot less enamored with cars.
I agree with you.
Yes. You know what I mean? It's just, it's expensive. We do not have that money. You know what I mean? So I think it's a different, back in the past, getting a car was like freedom. And now it feels like chains because you are tying yourself to monthly payments. You are tying yourself to maintenance. You are tying yourself to insurance. You are tying yourself to, if a bus breaks down, somebody else has to repair that bus. I'm not in charge of it. But if my car breaks down, I have to make sure my car is repaired correctly. I have to make sure I have a ride there and back. Every day that it's not working is my problem. If I have a problem with a bus, okay, I'll get on the next bus. I'll wait till the next one. It's not my issue. And even with a bike, it's just a lot easier to repair. And I also think that the people that might have planned for it, even if, you know, if you're up north, it's horrible. You know, I've been there. I've been at places where I could technically walk and I cannot because of prioritizing cars. And this is why I never like to talk about, well, we have to help the less fortunate among us by having better transit. No, I want nice transit. Right. I want frequent transit. I want reliable, extensive transit. It's not because we're helping the poor people, because in a good functioning country, you have trains that are going, you know, hundreds of miles an hour. It is so much easier. It is such a load off your back to be able to use transit and walk and bike, and you get exercise during the day. I think it's more of a luxury to be able to live this way than it is to be stuck having this expensive car and being locked in your house if you don't have it.
Now, I'm sure you're not saying that you don't care about the people who can't afford a car and need transit.
Yeah. I just think
you want to serve them too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But it's everyone. It's like if you have a good system, it's just much easier. I always think for policy, let people be a little bit like, what is selfish about this policy? You know, I have to know, like, I want this because I think it's a much nicer way to live. And also people don't die, you know, and also like poor people can get to work. You don't have as many people struggling right now. If somebody can't afford a car and they're unhoused, they often cannot get to work because to use the bus system, if it's in a different part of town, they just can't get there. If they have an appointment, they can't get there. And what that does is it throws people into being less stable because they can't access what they need to move up. And a lot of the time we just blame people for not being stable, but we don't have a system set up to actually exalt people, to actually work at, let people have their strengths and elevate them so that they can add to the community instead of being a burden. And we make it so that we have a community that pushes people to the margins, but not even to the margins. We just don't let people thrive. Like, we make it so hard. Like, if someone needs to see the doctor and they're going to be too sick to be able to go to work if they don't see the doctor, but they can't get to the doctor because they don't have transportation, and then we blame them for not having a job, that's crazy. Like, we need to set people up so that they're successful. And when we do, we all kind of elevate and we all get all the good qualities that these people have that they're not being allowed to get locked into.
What a concept.
Do you see autonomous vehicles fitting into this? I see Waymo all over the place in the places I've been lately. I see that as a disruption, that there'll still be cars, but there won't be humans driving them. which will help a lot.
I'm not a big fan of Waymo, and actually a lot of the technology with Waymo, they have people helping to drive the cars. So it's not driverless, really. They just say that a lot of new technology that quote unquote disrupts and displaces people often requires people. They're just in a different capacity than they were before.
Huh.
So, you know, there's some good podcasts that have gone into it. I'm not like super up on it, but I think what we have had with autonomous vehicles, there's these things called trains. and I think Waymo can be a possibility, but one of the issues with Waymo is like, you need somebody to clean it out after everyone's gone in. So that's, again, people needing to use it. You can have trains. You can have smaller vans. Like, I think it's more efficient to move more people at once than to move people in smaller vehicles. But that's going to be part of the landscape most likely. But I think we also don't want to say that, oh, they're autonomous. They don't have people watching them. They don't have people working with them. They do. And I think it's important to like acknowledge those workers.
Now, there's something that you were involved in getting a grant for, specifically called Safer Streets and Roads for All, right? What's that program?
I just was like, why haven't we gotten that grant for 10 years? I was like, why has it been so long? And so the city then pursued it. So the city pursued that, and I haven't heard as much about it as I'd like to have heard. The plan should be adopted in March, so hopefully we'll hear more, but I have not heard as much about it. But it's basically trying to make sure that we have safer streets, like what can we do? And part of the problem with a lot of these grants is it's, you know, it's a big grant, but it's not huge. So it's like, this is a grant to study what we need to do in order to fix it. But then the big money comes in for road widening and lengthening. And so it's like, am I, as a transportation department, going to get this $225,000 grant, or am I going to get this $10 million grant for this road? And so that's partially like being in Congress, like how can I, if I keep, and especially with the way that the Department of Transportation has trended to not prioritizing safety on our roads, how can I be bothering the city and being like, why don't you have help for this? Why aren't you fixing this if the money isn't there? If there's no motivation to do it because there's just not, you know, it's just going to be a lot more difficult to get it done and it's just not being prioritized at the federal level.
Okay.
It is being prioritized more at the Colorado level.
So shall we turn to politics?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I got my first postcard to support you in the mail yesterday and was very timely. So I was very excited that we were going to be talking today.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
What are the main reasons that you're running? Are you staging a political career and eventually you're going to be in Washington, D.C. Full time, working your way up to president of the United States?
That's not the hope. I'm not an East Coast person generally. Life can change, but I'm running because I'm fighting for universal health care, affordable housing, good union jobs, getting money out of politics. And that's just really important to me. I think right now we're at an inflection point. I think we don't have a country that people can trust, both people here and people like all of our allies abroad. If every 2 to 4 years we change who our allies are, we don't really have allies, as someone said to me last night. And so if we don't reform the government, if we don't get rid of political corruption, like not being able to trade stocks while you're in Congress, getting rid of people being allowed to be lobbyists, making sure that the Supreme Court has an enforceable code of ethics, making sure that, you know, the president has to abide by the Constitution, we just don't have a functioning country. And I think people are really comfortable. We have been very lucky having this country, having a stable democracy. And I think people think that, you know, on my website, you know, it's a democracy if you can keep it. And we haven't been keeping it well. We've, for the past 50 years, moneyed interests have brought corruption to every level of our government. And it's very important to me that we get that money out, that we overturn Citizens United eventually with a constitutional amendment when we have enough people to pass it. Because if we don't, we are basically, our country is being picked over by very wealthy people who do not prioritize and do not understand what it takes to live. They haven't had to worry about a grocery bill or paying their utilities or their rent or paying for health insurance. They haven't had to go through that Byzantine system over and over and over again and not necessarily receive the care they need or go into bankruptcy to get health care. And when we allow that money in and that money to decide the policies that our government can have, it's just never going to be people first. And so it's like people-centered Colorado Springs is about putting people first in terms of planning. And my campaign is also about putting people first when it comes to the government.
I agree with you, but what do you do first to start to make the changes?
Well, partially it's running. So one of the reasons I'm running is that I can then highlight. So, for example, we had a senior center open, and a huge reason we were able to have that senior center was working with Colorado Springs, but also federal dollars. Millions of federal dollars went into having that senior center be rebuilt in Colorado Springs, and saying the government does do good things if we make it do good things. If we underfund it and we overfund certain other things, and we don't worry about the debt, and we don't pay enough in taxes, and we don't have billionaires paying enough, then it's always going to be kind of limping along, not doing everything the way that it needs to do things because it's not fully funded and it's not prioritizing the right things. You know, it's like if we prioritize healthcare, we pay twice as much for healthcare in the United States. Well, if you have, you know, universal healthcare and there's a number of ways to do it, including Medicare for all, then you pay half as much with better outcomes. So, you know, it's like, and yes, you will pay more in taxes, but it'll still be half as much. So, like, so I think you're going to be okay. There's a lot we can do. A lot of it will depend on if I get elected. First off, just I want to continue to be in the community, continue to like go to places like the Men's Exchange, which every 10th suit is one that goes to somebody in need. You know, just looking at what's happening, looking at Solid Rock Community Corporation, which has built affordable housing, and Third Spaces, which is another thing we haven't gotten into. But there's just so much we can do that is really exciting. And then so it's like if I get into the government, it's just being strong, making the case, you know, looking at what bills are being passed and looking at what I can do to change them, to make them better, and letting people know what's happening in the government and why certain things aren't happening so that there's a lot of transparency instead of just, you know, kind of saying on high, oh, I know what to do and don't worry about it. I think that's been a huge problem. You have to talk to people. You have to hear what's going on. You know, like I always say, you can have a great policy, but if the implementation isn't good, it doesn't matter. If you have universal health care, but somebody can't get into their health care portal and they can't access it, then it doesn't matter. Mm.
So if across the country we elect a few hundred people like you, then suddenly these kinds of things become possible.
Exactly. And the expectation has to be there. Because if I'm like, I'm a secret, I'm going to secretly do all these things. And then I try to do them, but I haven't run on anything specific. So if I try to have universal healthcare, but I haven't run on universal healthcare, everyone's going to be like, what are you talking about? What are you trying to do? This is kind of out of left field. But if I've been running on universal healthcare, guess what I'm going to do when I get into Washington? I'm going to fight really hard for universal healthcare. Like, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to fight for unions. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to fight for affordable housing. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to fight to get money out of politics. Like, I'm pretty specific about what I'm running on. And when I get there, I'm going to be pretty clear about what I'm going to be fighting for. Like, you can listen. There are videos. There are policy positions. Like, you're not going to be shocked when I get there what I'm going to work on. Now, what will be available for me to do will depend on if there's a majority, will depend on if there's people that have been elected because of money and interests. And, you know, I'm not, you know, the strongest person there. I'd be junior. But I'm running on what I'm running on, and that's what I expect to be fighting for.
Well, and it's awesome. As I read through your platform, I'm like, how could anyone be opposed to these kind of things? How could anyone be opposed to universal health care so illness never leads to financial ruin? Like, how could you be against that? Affordable housing because stability starts with a roof over your head. How could anyone be against that? Fully fund public schools so every child can succeed. Like, what you believe in is what we were built on as a country. It shocks me that this isn't what everyone runs on. Like, we want this city, this state, this country to be a place where everyone can succeed and everyone can, quote, live the American dream. But we have to do it by starting at the bottom and making sure that everyone has access to the same things. So it was awesome to read through and be like, yes, this is why our country was built the way it was. So everyone had a chance at a good life.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's, yeah. And I think that's why we had the prosperity of the 1950s, was we had all these programs that allow people to thrive. All of these tons of actors that ended up being really successful in the 70s came out of, you know, working in entertainment for the government, like for troops abroad. You know, it's like all of these, you know, people painted murals. And those things that we don't necessarily know what's going to be innovative. So when we let people thrive, when we give them jobs according to their strengths and we let them get going with it, they get to go to cool places that we didn't expect they'd go to. Like, I know this is silly too, but physics discovered lasers. You know, you wouldn't think physics would discover lasers, but it did. And that's what's exciting about investing in innovation and not getting so caught up in just, you know, what thing will make us the most money? What's going to take the profit off the top? We don't know what's going to be the exciting new thing. So we need to invest in our population and let them innovate and like do cool stuff.
You sound like you just might have a future in this. Great sound bites. And Carrie, you just heard an example of why she's our CIO, our chief inspiration officer. She always delivers. She encapsulates the most meaningful thing that we're talking about in an episode. Thanks for doing that.
Well, and another thing I really like love about you is you're approachable, authentic, and you really do. It sounds cliche, but you really do light up a room. Like you start talking and like I'm invested and I can tell you're not reading off, you know, just topic points that you're like, oh, I have to hit this in my head. Like you can tell you're speaking from the heart, but with so much research that's gone behind it. And it's a real pleasure to meet a politician that, you know, truly is working to better their community, our world, based on what both, I mean, for you to say, like, I don't just want this for folks that are less fortunate. Like, I want this for all of us. Like, when we go back to transportation, like, when you're in New York or in Chicago, bigger cities that have planned for public transportation for us all to get around, the subway isn't just for someone who, A, can't afford a car or doesn't have a bike or, you know, is living in a tent. No, the subway is how a giant majority of people get around that city. So it's very cool to sit in a room with you because it just immediately, I feel like I know you and I want the same things as you.
Yay! and the thing I think that's important is that like you can't set it and forget it. I can think a policy is amazing right now and things might change and I need to be listening to the community that lives there and what's going on and constantly be updating, because I think what happened with political parties is it was just on high, we know what we're doing, don't worry about it, just donate to us. And it's like, no, you got to talk to the people that live there and see what people need. And I'm going to have my frame of what I think is a good way to do things, but I have to update it because I don't want to be outdated. I don't want to not know what's going on and miss things and miss details and miss nuances for policy that can make our lives better. You know, you got to kind of constantly be on it to try to make sure that your policy is good, that it helps people. Because I always say doing bad things, breaking things is so easy. But building a community takes everyone. Building a home takes everyone. It takes people of different skills and talents. And you can think that you're doing the best thing ever. And then you miss. And then you have to go back and be like willing to say, I missed. How do I fix it? Because, it's like with cars. People loved cars. People were so excited about highways and being able to drive across the country. And they tore out a ton of rail. And we stopped investing in rail since the 70s. And now it's really dangerous. And even though rail like went, and sorry, I wanted to say this about rail. It costs a lot to do rail well initially. And you need to invest in it initially. It lasts a very long time with a lot less upkeep. And we need to start talking about that, because putting in rail programs that are not that great, like up and down the Front Range, people will be frustrated with them when there's much better, newer technology that will cost a lot, but then will last like 30 years. Because that's why our rail system has lasted 50 years, even though we have done nothing to help it. So I just, you know, and it's still safer. So, okay, sorry, that was a sidetrack.
What are third spaces?
Third spaces are basically places people can come together that don't cost money, where you can just, you know, it's like a town square, stomping grounds, which has been done by the Solid Rock Community Corporation, and I think they're transitioning to a nonprofit. They have stomping grounds, and that's also going to have childcare there. They have a farmer's market. If you look at Bancroft Park in Old Colorado City, right now it's got the Christmas market, but I would love it to be car-free at least three sides around. that's another third space where you can walk to it. You can kind of, you can get into businesses there, but you don't have to spend money. And so you're just sort of able to amble in, enjoy people. Like a playground is the third space, just a space where you can go that you don't have to spend money, but you can, which can be really good for local businesses. But, you know, you're free to get in there. You don't have to schedule it with somebody. You don't have to park in the parking lot and get into the Target. Like a Target isn't really a third space because you're going there to shop, even if you do sometimes see people you know, or, you know, King Supers or something.
I've been in rural California quite a bit on this trip. And in rural California, most people drive quad cab pickup trucks, just like they do in Colorado. Whereas if you get to the coast, you see very few quad cab pickup trucks. I'm not saying none, but very few. And that ratio seems to indicate to me, at least, what type of political environment I'm in. And I'm not saying that everybody that drives a quad cab pickup truck is a Republican and everybody that doesn't is a Democrat. But as you travel around El Paso County and up the mountain in Congressional District 5, there's a lot of quad cab pickup trucks, and they don't want to give up the lifestyle they have. That's been my current experience. They don't even just want a car. They feel safe driving amongst cars because they know that if they get into a crash, they will hurt and kill the other people, and chances are they will be okay. It may sound weird, but it's a mindset, and I think I've watched for decades now in CD5 this hard right, maybe harder right than any other district in the country. I know the demographics are changing, but how will you get young people, the new demographic, to actually go out and vote? That is your hope if you're going to make this happen. How do you do that?
So I think this is, there's like two arguments. Go to the middle and just have milquetoast policies that don't really change people's lives. And I think what we've done is we've ignored all the people that are working, that are struggling, that bought that car because it was advertised to them and now have a difficult time with payments versus going in and seeing that there's a lot of workers out there that are struggling. I work with people that are, you know, to the right, middle, whatever. When I talk about universal health care, no one's like, oh no, I hate that. You know, when I talk about, like, I handed out 200 pieces of literature at the Veterans Parade. And I said, I'm Zuri Horowitz. I'm running for Congress. I'm fighting for universal health care, affordable housing, and good union jobs. And like 8 out of 10 people took my flyer. I think we don't make the case for good policy. And then we're like, why don't people? And I think we don't make the case for good policy, truthfully, because there's a lot of money in politics. I think people want these things. I think the money in politics means that the reason we can't have universal health care is because insurance companies don't like it and because a lot of people in Congress worked for those companies.
Yeah, that's true.
So you're clearly not talking about being in the middle. Do you think that means that it might take you a few election cycles to get elected, or do you think we're ready?
I think, truthfully, whoever wins, you know, whoever gets past the primary, it'll be because Trump has ruined our economy so much. And if you win, it will be because of how much our economy needs saving. I think these policies will make people's lives better and at least will immediately fix some of the problems that are going on. It's going to be a long road in terms of fixing our country and our economy. But I think at least these policies address the real issues that people are facing right now. So I can't predict it. I don't think it's necessarily going to be, oh, I ran such a perfect campaign and now I got elected. I think it'll be, we need a difference from a Republican. And what I worry is that if Democrats come in and we don't have good policies and we don't do anything to help people, that will once again ping pong between the parties. And there's this idea of like, well, we just have to win. Our side just has to win. It's like, no, it's about the actual policies you put in place that materially make people's lives better. And people will be more likely to support those policies if you put them in place correctly and successfully. And we move the talking points, we move the Overton window when we advocate for these policies, when we put these policies in place. If we always come to the table having already compromised our ideals, having already said, well, we just can't, and not going for the good policy that will really fix problems, especially right now. I don't think that's always the case. I don't think there's always an opening for really good, exciting innovation. I think there is an opening right now.
Wow. I think she's going to be good on Meet the Press and on the Joe Rogan Experience.
I agree. And that's tough to do.
Yeah. Before we forget, give us some websites that you want our listeners to remember from not just your campaign, but the other work.
Also, there's peoplecenteredcos.org, and you can check out what we were working on there. But I'd also go to our Instagram, COS Cars Kill, and Beautiful Colorado Springs. Those kind of update. But yeah, COS Cars Kill has been, I had somebody take over, and he's doing a really great job. And then my campaign website is zurifordcd5.com. That's ZURIFORCD5.com. Please donate, volunteer, get involved, come to caucus. It's March 3rd through 5th. And if you get there and really want to, please become a delegate and vote for me at assembly on March 14th. That ensures that I, if I get to 30%, I get onto the ballot for the primary. And it's really important, I think, to have these policies front and center and to try to make our world a little bit of a better place for people to live in.
Amen.
All right. Well, we have one last question for you.
We do. And that question is, since you've spent time out of the Springs and in the Springs, what is it that you love about Colorado Springs or Manitou Springs?
First off, I love the weather. I love the snow. I lived in California and I hate the heat. I love the dry snow and the beautiful skies and just every day knowing that when I look outside, like what I'm doing right now, it's just always a beautiful scene, you know, and my family lives here. And so it's been really wonderful to have their love and support and to not just be stuck alone out somewhere, but to be back with family. So I don't know. There's just something about Colorado people, Colorado Springs people that I feel like I just get and I feel comfortable with. And it feels just like home here. So I love it. And I also love, I know this is, sorry guys, there's a lot to say, but I moved a lot growing up. I lived in Colorado, Alaska, Israel till I was 4. We lived in the Chicago area for 8 years. I lived in New York City, lived in New Jersey, lived in California, lived back here. And there's something about being in a military town with people like, one thing that was really nice when I went back to high school here was that everyone else had also moved this much. And so they kind of understood who I was and what that was like and that weird thing of being in different schools and different places. And there was just sort of a sense of like, in some ways, that culture I really resonate with. And just having that understanding of like, oh, yeah, you've been all over the place, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stick around with us. We want to spend a few minutes just talking about some current events and news items. I want to turn to Carrie. You know, Carrie is our goddess of downtown, everything downtown. You know what's going on, and you're plugged in, especially because you do work for downtown Colorado Springs. Do you have anything to report?
I do. Very, very exciting news. We have just acquired, appointed, announced our new permanent CEO, Chelsea Gondek. She's been serving as our interim CEO since June. Prior to that, she was our COO, and prior to that, she was our Director of Planning and Mobility. And as of January 1st, she is officially in the CEO position, and I couldn't be more excited. She has great fresh vision coming up, and I can't wait to work on some of the projects that she has in mind. She has been lead on the Elevate Downtown plan, which will be finalized in first quarter, which basically directs all the work we do as Downtown Colorado Springs. And our entire staff and board is just unanimous in support behind her. And I think the next 10 years downtown are going to see some really great changes and really great energy. And so hope that anyone that's listening that hasn't met her will reach out via email, will come to some of our events, and we'll really get involved in the work that we're going to do downtown to make it even better than it has been for the past 10 years.
And she's been in the studio. She's been a guest on the Loving the Springs podcast.
So. She has. She had a great time. We probably should have her back in to talk to the two of you, but yes. She really enjoyed talking to you guys about, I can't remember if it was master plan.
That was at least part of the conversation.
It was part of it, yeah. But yeah, when we got the announcement, I mean, you should have seen the joy in the office. Just everyone is really behind her.
Cool. So we'll put a link in the show notes to that episode. So that's a way to start to get better acquainted with her. But we'll definitely, she's got a standing invitation to pop back in here.
Great.
Anything else in terms of downtown happenings? We're recording on December 19th, but it'll be after Christmas before we drop this episode.
We just encourage everyone to continue coming downtown and support your independent businesses in January and February. We know December obviously is big shopping season, big eating out season, and a lot of times January and February can slow down. But it's really important to support your local independent businesses. I mean, they are your neighbors. When you shop in independent businesses, 70 cents per dollar goes back into our own community via taxes. It helps with education, helps with improving the roads, helps with everything. So Don't forget about the little guys in January and February. If you got a little bit of extra money to spend, make sure you're doing it locally, because we want to make sure that they're here for next Christmas season.
There's one other news item I want to mention, and Al, I'm sure you'll have something to say about this too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And Zuri, you too, I imagine, because every one of us is a bicyclist of some sort. We want safer streets for sure. And, you know, one of the problems, in fact, I just saw the stat this morning that the biggest share of traffic accidents, according to the Colorado Department of Transportation, are because of speeding. They're speeding related. We'd love people to slow down. And Colorado Springs Police Department has got some new technology that might help with that a little bit. We knew this was coming. There's now two mobile traffic speed safety camera operations running around town. And we're in the middle of the 30-day trial period where if you get nabbed by one of these camera systems, you'll just get a warning. But when the 30 days is up, and I think that's coming up pretty quickly, then you could be cited for speeding.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I think they're going to be at different schools at different times, but that might have been months ago.
Yeah, they say they're going to deploy them in four areas: school zones, roads bordering municipal parks, neighborhoods, and construction zones.
Now, is the rule, as I understand it, it's 11 miles an hour over the speed limit that you'll start getting nabbed at?
Now, I have not read that officially said anywhere. Where did you get that, Al?
Just understanding the speed cameras in other places. That seems to be the way they set it up. I'd like to hear what Colorado Springs has done.
You know, that's a waste of time to put that in a school zone and not cite anybody unless they're driving 11 miles an hour over the speed limit in a school zone.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard that here, but we could, you know, we could.
Well,
yeah, we'll have to find out.
There's
got to
be some fudge factor built into it. They're not going to nail you at 21 in a school zone.
Probably not, yeah.
So they're going to nail you at some speed. I'd like to know that. And people should know that, because that becomes the hard speed limit. It's like most people around the country used to drive 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, and that's crept up to like 8, 9, 10, and if you come to California, about 25 miles an hour over the speed limit, and people are okay with that because everybody's comfortable with that speed. It's the 85th percentile, but people need to know, okay, if I go 12 miles an hour over, I'm going to get a ticket, or 11 miles, but if I keep it at, you know, 20, 30 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour speed zone in a school zone, I'm okay. And this is for you, Zuri. On 89, I think it's 89, it goes up into Denver. Mm-hmm. There's a school zone that says 55 miles an hour. School zone. And to me, that's Colorado in one sign. It's like, we love our kids fast. We love the fast kids because the rest of them can die. It's so ironic to see a sign like that. But we have it, and it's still up.
Yeah. So. I think that's one of those things that we can bring awareness to. I think also a lot of the time with charter schools, they aren't planned based on the surrounding area. So they're just sort of plopped down, and they can be in business parklets. And those are not built for kids to walk and bike to school. And they're not built for that level of congestion either. So we have to... Again, the planning is the key. I'm one of those people that are like, people are going to people. How can we make the system better so that we're less likely to people as badly? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and we can people in a good way. Like, how can we play to our strengths rather than the worst aspects of ourselves? So like guilt tripping people, I think if I'm fine with like, yeah, guilt trip people for speeding in New York City. But if you have to drive here and the roads are fast and you can't get home in any other way, and we have wide, fast roads that just encourage you to go so quickly, I'm like, well, what do we think is going to happen? Because we've built a culture that says, go fast, don't worry about it, you're first. And then when we're like, why are you doing that? You're like, well, everything that you built was to tell me to speed as fast as possible to get home.
Arizona is talking about eliminating speed limits on rural interstates.
Interesting.
Yeah. And people are already going about 90. A lot of speed limits are 80 in the West.
You know, there was a day when the speed limit across the country was 55 miles per hour.
I can't drive 55. Yeah, there's a song about that.
A lot of lives were saved, and a lot of gas was saved as well. Cars are a lot more fuel efficient at 55 than they are at 75.
Yes, but now 85. We're building cars to go 150. I mean, most cars, decent cars, will go that fast.
Not my car, luckily.
Well, and you all know this isn't the last you'll hear about speeds and safety on our streets here.
I'm all for the cameras, and I'd like to know what they're set at so that this is what you can expect. And people should be behaving. That's why we have a society. That's why we're civilized. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that goes to a lot of the things you described. You described kind of getting back to just doing what's right because it's what's
right.
And it feels darn good.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, too, is it's like having things be nice is actually really enjoyable. Like, you know, having universal health care is lovely. Not having to worry about your rent or your mortgage because it's 30% of how much you make. It's a nice way to live. Not worrying if I can afford groceries is great, or if I graduate, you know, putting student loans on young people entering, instead of us making sure that they start out their lives successfully and launch them forward, we like saddle people with huge numbers of loans to do professional jobs. It's nice to live in a place that like cares about people, that loves art, that loves beautiful things, that you know, cares about each other and makes sure that we are doing our best and are coming and are able to show up in the world in the best way possible. You know, it's not nice to live with a handicap or things always pulling you backwards.
Let's get back to people-centered.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right. Well, Zuri, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Loving the Springs.
Please tell your friends about it.
And slow down, pay attention, and drive safely. See you next time.
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival, or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.